Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good Tuesday evening to you all. Frat House Mike coming to you here from the Frat House for our Red Zone Blitz program, wrapping up everything that happened this week in the NFL during week five. And joining me as always, I've got my good friend Brandon with me. Brandon, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, very
ready
good.
Ready to go.
Absolutely. And boy, ready to go is right. Because week five, we sat there during those 1 o'clock games, and we didn't know what game to go to. And we have three screens here, folks. We're watching three screens at once. And we couldn't fill enough of them because as the 1 o'clock games were kicking down and clicking off the clock, we're sitting there going, oh, my gosh, what game do we go to? Because it seemed like almost everything was coming down to a tie and was threatening overtime. As it turned out, I think we only had one game that actually ended up in overtime. But, boy, oh, boy, what a Sunday it was, particularly in the early afternoon in those 1 o'clock games.
I'll say. That's for sure. You ain't kidding. We were all over the place trying to make sure we didn't miss anything good.
It was exciting, really exciting stuff. We're going to take a look at a couple of the games that jump off the map at us this week. And again, as we usually do, our program here is really just to talk about what went on the field. So if you've got a comment, if you've got a question, if you've got something you want to throw in to our conversation here, please, by all means, join in. Jump in and give us a holler, 347-826-9964. That is, if you're listening mobily, you can just call in, 347-826-9964. If you're sitting in front of a computer screen, though, and right now you're listening to this program, there's a Skype button there. And if you've got Skype, all you got to do is just hit the Skype button and a headset and a microphone, and you'll be loaded right into us just like that. And we'll get you on the air with us. So a couple of games we're going to start off with here, Brendan. And I got to be honest, I don't think, you know, here we are, we're looking at week five. To consider for a moment that we would ever be kicking off one of these programs highlighting Cleveland, I just didn't think it was possible. But we're going to take a look at the Cleveland Browns and the Tennessee Titans. Yeah. One would think, come on, this is a yawner. Well, it's two teams that probably not too many people really care about. But it actually turned into a really, really close game where Cleveland ended up winning it 29-28. And I guess maybe one would have thought that that's exactly the way this thing should have gone. The game was played at Tennessee, but listen, nobody in Vegas liked this line at all. They didn't like this matchup. They had Charlie Whitehurst under center for the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee was only getting a point and a half favor on this, so that was not giving them any respect. I guess coming out of this, we had to have thought, oh, yeah, this is Cleveland's probably their best shot. Wouldn't you say, Brandon?
Well, yeah. I would agree. Jake Locker actually did start the game. He got knocked out early in it.
Okay.
He was He came back from another injury, but Whitehurst did get primarily, you know, most of the game. But if you look at the game, it kind of looks like a tale of two halves. I mean, Tennessee dominated the first half, scoring all their points in the first half, and Cleveland scored all the points in the second half. Now, they did have some, you know, points scored in the first half, but, you know, it kind of looked like, you know, almost two different games per half. You got to give it to Cleveland, I guess, going into Tennessee and winning. Not that either team is, you know, playoff bound or anything at this point, but, you know, a lot of times two bad teams can make up a decent matchup. And generally, when you have two bad teams play, the home team generally wins. So Cleveland going in there kind of defied that little rule, per se. Generally, you know, when you have two bad teams playing head-to-head, the home team generally wins. So, you know, it's a good effort on the Browns' part.
I haven't had a chance to listen to Tennessee sports talk radio, if anything like that actually exists. But
if it did, it'd probably be volunteer radio, you know, the Tennessee Volunteers.
Exactly. I would imagine that there are some people down in that neck of the wood that are probably saying, hell with this Jake Locker. Let's stick with Charlie Whitehurst, huh? I mean, didn't 13 of 21, 194 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. And as you're pointing out, almost all the points were scored when Whitehurst came into the game. So there might be some people down there in Tennessee saying, let's just stick with this guy. I don't know. Hey,
I think Locker had some good games, though, earlier in the season before he got hurt. And, you know, I think that accounted for their one win that they do have. So I don't know. I don't think Tennessee's totally given up on Locker yet. I mean, I think this is, his third year. So they're, you know, they're trying to decide if he's their franchise quarterback moving forward, but I don't think they've given up on him quite yet, like, you know, like say Minnesota has on Christian Ponder.
Trying to keep up with that man's list of injuries though this season has been a bit difficult. I mean, it seems to be one thing after another.
I don't think it's just this season. I think that's kind of been Jake Locker's issues. You know, every time he starts to get on a roll, he gets an injury. And then he, you know, it sets things back. And then he comes back and he starts to get on a roll. Same cycle seems to reoccur.
Well, if we've got any Cleveland Browns fans out there, listen, we just showed your team a little bit of love. Don't expect it every week. It's probably not going to happen. But we did it now. So, you know, show us a little bit of love. Give us a holler. 347-826-9964. How about we go over and take a look at a game that, hey, well, you know something? We actually kind of tuned it. We began tuning it out. Because it had gotten a little bit lopsided, and that was our Philadelphia Eagles playing at home. They're playing the St. Louis Rams. You know, they've got their merry-go-round of quarterbacks coming in there at the Rams. Everybody here, I think, pretty much thought, okay, yeah, this should be a fairly easy Eagles victory. They were favored by 7 going into the game. And had they stopped the game after the third quarter, well, they would have met that spread quite easily. But in football, we play 4 quarters. And as it turned out, the Eagles only won this thing by 6, 34-28. A lot of people in the Philadelphia region right now are really down on the Eagles as a result of this, saying this team really hasn't shown any dominance whatsoever. They might be 4-1, but they're a weak 4-1. It could just as easily be 1-4. Nick Foles hasn't shown exactly the same kind of charisma either on camera or on the field that he showed us last year, and everybody's scratching their head, what the hell's with LeSean McCoy? This does seem to be a bit of a head-scratcher here, Brandon. I mean, I think everybody in Philadelphia needs to just kind of, hey, you know, I hate the phrase, but pump the brakes here, baby. 4-1 is 4-1, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would tend to agree. It's the beginning of a season. Now's the time to have, you know, the little hiccups they're kind of having. I don't think Nick Foles has looked bad. He's not been as perfect as he was last year. But then again, now the defensive coordinators have a whole year worth of film to look at him. So, you know, you're going to expect a little bit of, you know, back off. Besides, some of the numbers he put up last year, you know, he may not ever see again just because, you know, that's some of the stuff he did with his touchdown to interception ratio, you're just not going to see that very often. I think your second part of your comment there was the bigger problem is what's up with McCoy. I mean, LeSean McCoy was the NFL leading running back last year, and this year he can't seem to get out of his own way. He can't get a decent yards per carry going in any game. He's not breaking anything loose. It seems like he's not used in the passing game now that they have Sproles. So, you know, his touches are severely less. Sproles is doing a really good job for what he's doing when he's in there. His yards per carry is, you know, a lot higher than McCoy. And, you know, out of the, I don't think anybody can you know, dispute his running and catching ability. And then you can just for fun throw in his punt returns, and man, you got, you know, all purpose player yards going on.
Well, a lot of people want to point to the offensive line, and obviously the and this, I mean, that's a valid point to make, I suppose.
It is.
Because the Eagles have been decimated on their offensive line. And you know something? Frankly, I blame the team for not having capable, suitable backups. This was an area that a lot of people looked at preseason and said, you know something? If you get one or two dinged up there, you might have a little bit of a problem. Well, they ended up getting three. Now, we got one of them back this week. But everybody continues to point to that. I'm going to say this. I'm not sure I'm buying that. And I'll tell you why, because you have been able to see Sproles break it free for a couple of big gainers. And just this past week, Sproles did have 51 yards, not a heck of a lot, 7 carries. Take a look at that average, though. That's a 7.3 average. That's the kind of average we're used to seeing from McCoy. That's not what we're getting. So for McCoy to sit there and say, oh, or anybody to say, well, McCoy's not getting the yards because he doesn't have the protection up front, I say, balderdash.
Well, yeah. You're probably right. You know, it could just be a little bit of everything. And as they start getting, you know, healthier on the line, you know, you should see an improvement. I mean, like you said, they got one back this past week. You know, Kelsey seems to be the linchpin of the group. And, you know, when he's back, you know, I think that's going to, you know, make a big improvement. But, you know, just to go to your point, you know, you said they should have capable backups. There's how many times do we talk about teams like the Packers and even New England? We were talking a little bit last week that already have line problems. There's a lot of teams in this league who can't even put 5 capable guys on the line. You know, the Eagles got, you know, I think they when they have the healthy 5, you know, I think they're not a bad line. It's just, you know, they, like you said, they had 3 injuries early in the season, and you can't replace 3. You can replace 1, maybe 2, but you can't replace 3.
And yet, you know, so, something, Brandon, in any given draft, there always seems to be an overabundance of offensive linemen. And you would think that, obviously, a lot of these guys get drafted. Maybe they don't make the team. They still got to be out there somewhere. You can pull them back in if need be. And, you know, that's what I don't understand. I don't understand how you could have so many teams, you know, sitting around crying over the fact, oh, our offensive line is banged up.
Well,
I don't
know. Maybe some of these draft picks just, you know, don't have what it takes to make it at the top level. And, you know, irregardless of whether you need a body or not, it's just, you know, they're not going to be able to perform. You know, I mean, sometimes they do develop over time. But generally, I've noticed with offensive linemen, they generally have, you know, if they're a tackle or a guard, they're pretty good from the beginning. You know, they do have to, you know, coaching and repetitions and practice can fine-tune their game, but they either have it or they don't when they get there. And, you know, sometimes you'll see some guys who can't switch from, you know, the outside tackle to the inside guard and, you know, whatever, very easily. But sometimes you can find a guy who can play all the positions on the line. It just depends on their makeup. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is some of the college guys, no matter how much time you give them, it's probably not going to help them. It's not like a quarterback where they, you know, give them a year or two and you could see a significant change. I think with a lineman, especially an offensive lineman, they either have the quickness and the skills or they don't to play at that level. And I think they find it pretty quickly. That's why you see a lot drafted and a lot cut, because they can pretty much weed them out pretty quickly.
We've got some with the whole Nick Foles, I guess, complexity of the issue. Real quick, just bringing up a kind of an anomaly, I suppose. Ranked number 6 in the league in yards. So for those that are out there wringing their hands, hey, the guy's getting the yardage. The problem is that his completion percentage is an abysmal 59%. So it's well below, I guess, where the average would be. And then, of course, you know, I guess everybody's expecting the 27-2 kind of performance that you had last year, but you know, that everybody had to understand that was probably the anomaly. Right now, Foles is sitting with 8 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. So the interception rate is up a little bit higher. Nobody should really be surprised by that. QB rating, though, 82.5. So there's two areas that I think need to be corrected, and one of them has to be that completion percentage.
Well, a lot of that could be he might be rushed because of the line issues. You know, maybe it's some of it could be, you know, maybe some of his, you know, receivers downfield aren't as open as they were. They don't have the big home run threat of DeSean Jackson anymore, which may be tightening it up a little bit for the other guys. Not taking away from the guys they have. I think they still have a pretty solid receiving core. And, you know, Zach Ertz at the tight end's coming along very nicely as a player. You know, I think just give this team time. Like you said at the beginning, it's early in the season. They still have four wins, only one loss. They're not playing in a super hard division. I mean, yeah, Dallas is looking good for now, but, you know, December's coming, and that'll, you know, pretty much be the end of them. So, you know, just I say be patient as an Eagles fan. You don't have a lot to worry about being 4-1 at this point in the season. I think this team only gets better. I don't see it getting worse. I mean, clearly a major injury like the Foles or McCoy or Sproles could you know, do them, could hurt the team. But, you know, you can't ever predict that kind of thing. I think this team will gel and keep going.
Speaking of the NFC East, don't look now, but here come the Giants. you know, you just pointed out, Dallas is, holding their own. But listen, they're doing more than holding their own. Dallas Cowboys right now are quietly 4-1. And how about this one? The Giants last week with their win over the Atlanta Falcons, 30-20, are now 3-2 in the NFC East. This was a division that many thought, yeah, the Eagles should be able to walk away with this one easily. Not looking that way at this point right now. I've got some questions with this was a team, Brandon, you and I came on here 4 weeks ago and said, dear God, they are just god-awful.
Yep.
And I guess particularly in the past 2 weeks, they seem to have solved some of their problems. At the same time, I got to go over and look at the other side of it and go, boy, Matt Ryan, I thought, was going to have himself a comeback season. And in the past 2 weeks, he's looked god-awful. What in the world is going on here?
Well, I mean, I think the beginning part with the Giants, when you and I were, you know, sitting here watching them and just shaking our head at how miserable they were, you know, there was clear, you know, Eli Manning and the new offensive coordinator were not on the same page. They might have done some, you know, I don't know, like rectifying of that situation, because clearly they are doing something right now. I can't really explain it's too much for the Matt Ryan thing. You look at his stats, you don't really see anything glaring. I mean, he's putting up the yards, and they're just not scoring the points, and their running game hasn't been the greatest this year. I mean, they can't get Jacquizz Rodgers just doesn't seem to have it. Steven Jackson shows, you know, moments, but they're not putting up, you know, the numbers they should be. If you look at their play selection, too, at the number of rushing attempts they have, it doesn't look like they're really committed to the running game for whatever reason. And looking at the line of the scoring, they weren't playing from behind really at any point till later in the fourth quarter. So they should have, you know, there should have been more of a running game there. You know, maybe that's something you could kind of point to, you know, the play calling a little bit on the Falcons. I mean, I'm just looking at the numbers here quickly, and it looks like they ran all of 21 running plays to 45 passing attempts.
Right.
I mean, there's a little inequity there. You know, you got to have a little more balance. I mean, look at the Giants side. It's 34-30. They actually lean more towards the rushing than the passing. So, you know, that could be more of the answer than Matt Ryan. I mean, Matt Ryan's numbers don't look horrible. His completion percentage is not the greatest, but not awful. 300 yards, touchdown, you know, one interception. The interceptions, I don't know what his season's numbers for interceptions are, but, you know, I think that, you know, you could probably look at more of the coaching here, you know, play selection kind of thing than one specific player probably. But
Matt Ryan right now is ranked the number two quarterback in the league by virtue of yards. He's got himself 11 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. QB rating of 96.4. That's one of the higher QB ratings in the league. The guy does appear to be having himself a comeback season. It just doesn't seem to be translating to wins on the field.
Yeah, it looks like they need to do something about this rushing game here if the Falcons want to avoid, you know, another disappointing season.
it seems like, though, we've been talking about a lack of a running game with that Falcons team for many, many seasons now. Let's go back real quick, because you had brought up the whole situation with the Giants and how you and I just kind of looked at it at the beginning of the season and shook our head. One of the things that we were seeing was an Eli Manning that was trying to fit into a new scheme and just really wasn't comfortable with it at all. You could see he didn't like where his feet were. They're trying to change everything with this guy. And yet, right now, Eli, 13th ranked quarterback in the league, he's got himself 11 touchdown passes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Did anybody know that one? You talk about doing something quietly. 11 touchdown passes for Eli Manning and only 5 interceptions himself. And he's pulling a 95.6 QB rating. So, you know, maybe the Giants fans out there have some reason to be optimistic, and I guess maybe I better shut my mouth about how bad they are.
Well, I don't know about that. I think it's a long season, as we've said. I think this Giants team is getting a little long in the tooth. They're not too far away from having to, you know, retool a bit. Let's let it play out. Like, it's early in the season. They made a nice recovery from the first 2 weeks, which were as we said, god awful. Let's just see how they, do over the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm not sold on them, is what I'm saying. I just don't think the Giants. They're always streaky. You know, all of a sudden they'll start playing better, and then they go back to playing horrible. So let's just. I think we should give that one some time. I definitely think the Eagles and the Cowboys are the cream of the crop of the East. So, you know, the Giants, they're hanging tough. Let's just, you know, give it some time.
I really wonder, you know, if we were to see, and I'm just speaking hypothetically and off the top of my head as you, you know, brought up the Dallas Cowboys because I didn't have them on the list. But, you know, I wonder if that team really is all about DeMarco Murray at this point. That if all of a sudden we were to see that guy get injured again, whether mm-hmm. in fact that would be their downfall.
Well,
you know, because it just seems so much of what the Dallas Cowboys are trying to do right now this season is really on the back of DeMarco Murray, which is something we haven't seen from the Dallas Cowboys offensive scheme-wise in quite a few years.
Now, bringing up DeMarco Murray, I've seen a couple interesting stats on him today. They said he's on pace to set more first downs than any other running back in NFL history at this point. In other words, making more first downs on the ground than any other back has at the pace he's going so far. The other thing I saw is Dallas is also trying to limit his touches so they don't, like you said, wear him out or see him get injured, because I think they realize how key he is to their success. They got a huge test this week. They're going to see Seattle, and yep. That should be a heck of a game. I mean, they got to go into that, you know, 12th man loud, you know, raucous place out there in Seattle, and we'll see what Dallas is made of. They win that game, that would be kind of a statement, I think.
Oh boy, would it ever! And it would certainly put the heat up on the Philadelphia Eagles to be able to do likewise later on in the season when the Eagles play Seattle.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see it though. I think Seattle's going to.
I don't either. I don't either. After watching that game last evening, I am prepared to say this. I think that Russell Wilson might just be the best quarterback right now in the entire NFL.
Well, they kept making key mistakes. I mean, they had 3 touchdowns to Sidney Rice called back on penalties.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, and they still won the game going away. So, you know, I think Seattle, like you said, they're hitting on all 8. Even when they make mistakes that generally cost other teams games, they're still winning. So, yeah, I think you're going to see them put it to Dallas, I think, especially in Seattle. That's a tough place for anybody to play.
The New Orleans Saints right now are 2-3, and that's a bit of a shocker. And that is mm-hmm. that's even after coming off a win this past Sunday, an overtime win. I think it was the only – it looked like we were going to have a lot more overtime games, but I think this was the only one, actually, that turned out to be an overtime game.
No, we did have one other one. There was one other.
Okay.
I think Dallas went overtime as well.
Okay. I didn't have that one on the list. All right.
Yeah.
But the Saints – ultimately, in the end, came back and beat the Buccaneers 37-31 in overtime. This was a back-and-forther where, at one point, Tampa Bay actually had the lead on New Orleans 31-20 early in the fourth quarter. What in the... Drew Brees put the ball in the air 57 times. That's insane. Absolutely insane. 371 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Is it turnovers that are killing these guys? What in the world is going on with New Orleans?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I think their receiving core may not be as good as it's been in the past. Colston may be, you know, losing a step as he's getting a little older. You know, their Jimmy Graham can't do it all, and he left the game early, hurt with a shoulder injury. So, you know, it's kind of tough. They have a whole cast of characters that are a little different if you look down their receiving core compared to what they had in years past. And they also have injuries in the running game. I mean, Mark Ingram's been hurt. I think he's scheduled to come back. Kyrie Robinson in his place hasn't done a bad job. May actually keep Ingram on the bench a little bit because he's played so well. Pierre Thomas has done, you know, what he's done in his little spot, you know, plays in the game. But, you know, they clearly are not what they used to be on offense. They're trying to play like they used to be with 57 pass attempts, but they're not, you know, they clearly don't have what they used to have, you know, with Robert Beachum and the little guy, number 16, his name's escaping me, Lance Moore. Him and Breeze had a, you know, nice connection, and he's just, I don't know, I'm not sure what's wrong with him, to be honest with you.
Well, and the other component to it, I believe, is that this used to be as well a feared defense, and it doesn't seem to be as feared as it used to be either. You're seeing an awful lot of points being put up on this New Orleans team. In fact, I just wanted to go see what their points against were at this point. Points for 132, points against 141. This is not the same. This whole team doesn't resemble anything that it did, I guess, about 3-4 seasons ago.
No, it's clearly taken a few steps back. You know, I think even last year it showed a little bit. They were supposed to, you know, clearly be the cream of the crop, and I think they kind of limped into the, you know, the playoffs as a wild card behind the Panthers, and, you know, they had an early exit. So, you know, I don't know. They're not even looking too healthy right now to even make a playoff, so they need to fix some things, that's for sure.
Yep.
I mean, they're not out of their division. Carolina's only, you know, a game ahead of them, so, that, you know, they're in a weak division. Well, appears to be a weak division anyway. There's no clear dominant teams going out there to like a 4-1 or 3-1 record like we see in some of the other divisions.
We got a comment from our chat room here from one of our listeners indicating penalties, especially on defensive side, killing the Saints. Rob Ryan has said as much, even as much lately. So apparently not a very disciplined, defensive team right now at this point, if you're going to be taking a lot of penalties. So.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I mean, I can, you know, just from watching what we've seen here and there, of the Saints, they have not been, you know, anything really when it comes down right down to it. They've not been the catalyst, I guess, on defense that they've been. And Rex Ryan's constantly looking frustrated and seeing mistakes and penalties. You know, that's just on defense. That's a tough thing. This year, we're seeing a lot more of it with the emphasis on the illegal contact and pass interference. And, you know, that's just killing defenses from, you know, that standpoint. So I'm sure the Saints are in the same boat from that point of view, but they got to cut back on these mistakes and start playing some better football.
Well, incredibly, we have already gone about halfway through this program. I cannot believe it, but that is the case. Brandon and I are going to step away for 1 minute here just to recognize a couple of our friends and our sponsors. And when we come back, we expect to see that a whole bunch of you have jumped in online, 347-826-9964. And we're going to take your calls on what you think's going on here as we wrap up week 5.
Away from your computer? That's no problem. Take CLW83 Podcast with you wherever you go with the TuneIn Radio app. Download the free TuneIn app from the App Store or Google Play. Then search for CLW83 to connect to the latest editions of the NAWC, Touch 'Em All, The BS Big Show, and all of your other favorite CLW83 programs. CLW83, online, on demand, and on the go with the TuneIn app for Apple and Android devices. Download it today.
Do you enjoy a completely different perspective from all other run-of-the-mill sports shows?
What in the wide, wide world of sports?
Then the Frat House Sports Show is the show for you. Join Frat House Mike and Sidekick every Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern for your weekly dose of the Frat House Sports Show. From NASCAR to hockey and everything in between, the Frat House Sports Show covers it all. Be sure to like their page on Facebook and check out their website, frathousesports.net, right here on HerbFM.com.
All righty, and welcome back to the Red Zone Blitz. Frat House Mike here with you from the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Joining me, Brandon. And they're not listening to me, Brandon, because I told them. I gave them 1 minute. 347-826-9964. I said to them, get on the line. And they're not listening. I don't know. But I guess we got to dial the phone for them.
I guess.
Yeah, really. Because this is the program you want to be jumping in on. I mean, we're at week five, folks, in the NFL season. And we're wrapping it up, and we got some upsets here. How about this upset? Or is it an upset? I don't know. Don't look now, as I pointed out before, but the Buffalo Bills are leading the AFC East at 3-2. Well, let's couch this. I guess technically they're tied with New England, who are also 3-2. But yeah, the Buffalo Bills, after coming off a 17-14 win of the Detroit Lions. This one was a bit improbable. Excuse me. First of all, it was a game in Detroit. Detroit was a heavy 7-point favorite. Kyle Orton coming in to take over the reins for E.J. Manuel. And 30 of 43, 308 yards. Yeah, he had an interception, but he also had a touchdown. Didn't look half bad. Positively, no rushing game for the Buffalo Bills whatsoever. Everything was done in the air. Was this just a lucky game here, Brandon, or what? Because I don't think anybody was expecting this.
Well, I'll tell you, here's where I see some of this. The defensive coordinator, Jim Schwartz, for the Buffalo Bills, was the head coach of the Lions last year, so he clearly went in there wanting this game. He actually mentioned to the team in preseason that he'd love to win this game and get carried off on the shoulders of his players from going back to Detroit and being the conquering hero, and they did carry him off. Let's get this straight. This is an early season, regular season game, and you're carrying your defensive coordinator off on your shoulders. This team is just – they're headed for nowhere good. They bailed on E.J. Manuel and went with Orton. His numbers look okay, you know, considering they got him so late in the season, but I don't think this is going to last. I think this was just the team was up to play Detroit because of Schwartz. They really, really wanted to get this game for him, and it took them the entire game to do it. So, you know, I think Detroit's still the better team. Detroit's nursing some injuries right now. Calvin Johnson is just they're talking about shutting him down for a game, maybe two, let him get a little healthier. So, you know, they're not running on all eight cylinders at the moment either. So, you know what? You got to take this with a little bit of grain of salt. I don't think Buffalo's got the staying power to do this all season. And
obviously,
if anything, I think – go ahead.
Okay, obviously I was going to say that, look, Buffalo went into this game 2-2.
Right.
But still in a very, very competitive spot in the AFC East. I don't understand – now, look, I mean – if the guy was really stinking up the joint, I could see it, but I didn't understand the whole concept of making the move on E.J. Manuel. If you're in a position, if your team is still in a position, and forget what it looks like in the rest of the AFC, because let's get it straight, you play first for your division. If you can win your division, you're going to the playoffs. So you think about that first. Why is this team appearing to be knee-jerking so early, so quickly on their quarterback?
Well, I think you got a couple things going on here. One, you know, obviously new ownership. New ownership's going to want to have their people running the show. So the guys running the show now want to win so that it makes it harder for the new owner to come in and clean house. That's part of it. But I think E.J. Manuel, it's starting to come out. He may be a bit of a head case. If you just going back to the beginning of this season, I remember reading an article about E.J. Manuel, how he was not elected a team captain for his team as he was the year before. It's almost like his teammates have a problem with him. And even after this particular game, Sammy Watkins, the rookie receiver they drafted like with the fifth overall pick, made a comment, an innocuous comment, but he made a comment to something to the effect, it was really nice having a veteran quarterback throwing the ball. It just seems like the team, maybe the other players, I mean, the players didn't elect him a captain. You know, you got a rookie making a comment like that, and it's like, what would a rookie care? A rookie doesn't have any experience over a veteran quarterback, or, you know what I mean? It just seems like,
good point.
I don't know if it's a click thing or what, but maybe E.J. Manuel is a bit of a head case. I don't know. The Bills have been pretty good at keeping it under wraps if it is, but it's really surprising if, you know, he's the future leader of the team going into the season. There wasn't much question that he was going to be the quarterback. You know, why is the guy not, you know, the elected to be a team captain? That got to, you know, that got to raise a few questions at least,
right.
You know. But I don't know. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe the coaches, you know, see more in the locker room than we do. Maybe they saw something that they just didn't like with the chemistry. So, you know, we'll just have
to see
how it goes out.
Somebody you and I both like and we respect over on ESPN is Adam Schefter. And Schefter was on with Keith Olbermann last evening over on ESPN. And let me just real quick, let me just play a couple of minutes here of what Schefter had to say about E.J. Manuel and the Bills.
Okay.
Is that also true now, that exact same construct in Buffalo? Because Kyle Orton comes out, 308 yards, beats the Lions, first game as a starting quarterback yesterday. E.J. Manuel, you know, throw out the manual?
Well, it's a situation there where they invested a first-round pick in E.J. Manuel. And you speak to people around the league, they say that Buffalo's 21 men are very strong, but that 22nd guy, that quarterback, that's the real question mark. They've turned it over to Kyle Orton, who they gave a two-year, $11 million contract in August. Once they gave him that contract, you knew that they were going to give him the football at some point in time in the starting job, because it goes back to the preseason. The crowd at some point wanted E.J. Manuel on the bench. There were questions about whether he could get the job done. And once this team started struggling after it got out to the 2-0 start it did, it was only a matter of time before they turned to Kyle Orton, which they eventually did. Now, he pulled out the game yesterday. It seemed like really destined forces at work, because this win came in Detroit, where Ralph Wilson, their former owner, is buried, was buried this past March. Mary Wilson, in her last game as the Bills owner, is given a game ball by the team. The Bills will be transferred over to the Pegula family on Wednesday. Once the NFL owners approve that sale of $1.4 billion, the Pegulas will step in. They'll see the New England Patriots in their first game as the Bills owner. And the Bills almost seemed destined to win that game in Detroit yesterday.
And get stuck with E.J. Manuel, because it's not like anybody saw this coming. Oh, by the way, they did. From your Twitter feed leading up to the 2013 draft, Jimbo Fisher was glowing about Manuel as a guy, as a person, but open and honest with teams about how limited he felt he would be as an NFL quarterback. What's the long-term scenario?
Right now, the Bills are stuck because they did invest that first-round draft choice in E.J. Manuel. And that was the scouting report on E.J. Manuel when you speak to teams coming out. They felt like he's a great leader. He's a model citizen. He's somebody you want in your locker room, but he's not necessarily going to be a standout NFL quarterback. And that's exactly what transpired in Buffalo. They put all this talent around him, and at this point in his career, he didn't have the accuracy or the acumen to get them the football at the right time in the right spot. So right now, Buffalo figured the best thing to do is to bench E.J. Manuel, give him some time to think about what he had done wrong, maybe grow him as a quarterback, get him away from the game, slow it down for him. But the fact is, when he was playing and starting, he wasn't going to be succeeding as a quarterback, which is why they turned to Kyle Orton in the hopes of getting the type of spark that the Bills got in Detroit yesterday that wouldn't have come without Lions kickers struggling the way they did. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that E.J. Manuel, right now, the Buffalo Bills felt was better off on the bench, which is what many coaches and front office people thought would be the case when the Bills made him a first-round draft pick.
Yes.
Schefter's not justifying what they did, but he's explaining it. And in his explanation there, Brandon, he actually made the comment that E.J. Manuel will not be a star quarterback. You and I talked about this a little bit on Sunday, And I was a bit annoyed at the whole situation because this is a young kid, and frankly, I really am a little bit not that I have anything vested in EJ Manuel, but I just hate seeing it done to a young kid like this. I'm concerned that what could happen here is Manuel turns out to be a situation like Mark Sanchez over with the Jets, where they didn't use him properly, they didn't put him into a position to succeed, and all of a sudden, everybody was coming down and going, well, the guy sucks. And I don't think that that's fair. I don't think that EJ Manuel's been given the right time yet.
I agree. I don't think the jury's totally out on Manuel, but he may be done in Buffalo. It just depends how things go moving forward. I mean, if the new ownership does come in and clean house, you know, a new coach ain't necessarily going to be on board with, you know, the last guy's draft pick. We see that from time to time, you know, throughout the league where, you know, a new regime comes in and, you know, high draft picks from other regimes are, you know, disregarded more or less in a roundabout way. So they don't, you know, discard it. So, you know, we may see the end of EJ Manuel, but unfortunately, because of him being such a high pick, he'll probably be on their roster for at least another year. Right. Maybe two. I mean,
maybe two.
He got hurt. He was hurt most of last season. He really hasn't had a chance. And, you know, he gets the right guy in there as a quarterback coach. They might be able to develop him. I don't know. Well, time's going to tell. I agree. I don't think they've done it. And as Schefter was pointing out in their thing there, you know, Detroit should have won this game. They've had horrible kicking. And I've just read a report that it seems like the Detroit Lions are going to sign former Denver Bronco kicker Matt Prater. So they may have just solved their kicking problems. We'll see.
Well, who was that kicker that they just – was that our former Philadelphia Eagles kicker?
Alex Henry was the second one they had. Yep. This is their third kicker. They've already gone through two. 5 weeks into the season, and they're already through on their third kicker for the sixth game.
You know, there's just something wrong about that. If you open up a football season and you can't seem to know who your kicker is, huh? Seriously, that seems pretty basic. Oh, man alive.
Well, here's the problem I get. Here's the problem that you can see when it comes to something like this. You can't miss as many kicks as they've been missing.
Yep.
I mean, they've missed. They are, the Lions right now as we sit are 0-for-6 from 40 to 49 yards. 40 to 49 yards an NFL kicker needs to make. It's that simple. They can't be 0-for-6 from that range. You know, I understand when you get to the 50, 55 plus, yeah, you're going to miss a kick here and there. Not everybody has the accuracy in that kind of distance. But, you know, as an NFL kicker, you got to be able to make it from the 40, you know, from a 40 to 49 yard field goal. You can't be missing six between two different kickers. You know, the Lions are actually, you look at their record at 3-2 after seeing some of these stats on their kicking, I didn't realize how bad they were. You know, it's a miracle they were 3-2, to be honest with you.
That's a very, very good point. Very good point. Let's go take a look at a game that we had highlighted last Thursday evening on our Frat House Sports Show. I think you and I talked about it a little bit here last Tuesday. I know that we talked about the New England Patriots the week before that. So make this 3 weeks in a row that we're going to get into a little New England Patriots chat. You and I are going to feel like geniuses here in a moment when I play another clip that from Schefter with Keith Olbermann. You and I are going to feel like complete geniuses. But boy, oh boy, didn't you and I say it. Listen, you can't keep Tom Brady down. For all the Tom Brady chat that there, you know, had been leading up to the game this past Sunday night between the New England Patriots and the Cincinnati Bengals, Cincinnati coming in here off a bye, the only unbeaten team in the entire AFC at 3-0. And what happens to them? Well, they get their butts handed right back to them and told to go on home. 43-17, the Patriots manhandled them. This game was absolutely incredible. I mean, it was surgical.
Well, it was kind of a mirror image of the week before. I mean, the Patriots lost on Monday Night Football 41-14 to the Chiefs, and this week they turn around and hand it to the Bengals on Sunday Night Football 43-17. So, you know, we talked about it, like you said last week. We knew this was coming.
Brady and Belichick don't lose two games in a row, but one time in their entire career, and they're certainly not going to come home to Foxborough and play in prime time and be embarrassed. You don't hear anybody talking, is Tom Brady done now, do you? I mean,
no,
I think he pretty
not.
Much quelled all that in one game.
505 yards of offense, the New England.
Yep.
That's just from New England side, 505 yards of offense. Brandon, there was actually a running game.
Yeah,
220 yards.
Too.
220 yards and a touchdown from Stephen Ridley. Huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
so, all right.
Shane Vereen actually was more impressive. He only had 9 carries for 90 yards at a 10 yards a clip out of the backfield. And, you know, throw in 3 catches for 18 yards. He put in 108 yards of offense as well from the backfield. So,
but, you know, Vereen seems to be able to rip off the longer runs. That seems to be his specialty, is he can rip off those longer runs. Ridley's a little more of a 3-4 well, 5-yarder.
His average on 9 carries, you know, is 10 yards per carry.
Right.
His longest was only 19 yards.
19.
It's not like he
right.
had one really long one
right.
pumping it
right.
up. So he
right.
was pretty consistent in there.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. His average is above the normal average you would see from from most of your top rushing, rushers in the entire league. Did we see a change in the game plan here, or is this not a very good Cincinnati defense?
Well, it may be a little bit of both, but, I mean, Josh McDaniels, after the beating they took in Kansas City, said he called a bad game and they needed to, you know, address that. And he did clearly, you know, address that. He got Gronkowski more involved. Tim Wright, the tight end they traded for in the Logan Mankins deal preseason, finally saw the field. He got 5 catches for 85 yards and a touchdown. You know, it almost looks like they can get their 2 tight end tandem going again. They're having issues in the wide receiver area for sure. I mean, Edelman didn't have the best game. They waived Kembrell Tompkins on Saturday, who just got picked up by the Oakland Raiders. And, you know, Brandon LaFell was dropping more catch balls than he caught. So Danny Amendola hasn't been anywhere all year. They got to do something in the wide receiver position. Edelman can't be the only one. Edelman's a great complimentary guy, but I don't see him as a number one. So if you're going to have 2 or 3 number twos, they all got to play and be consistent, and they're not right now. Amendola needs to pick up his pace for sure. The tight ends, seeing 2 tight ends get, you know, some plays is encouraging, but you know they certainly have some issues yet on offense.
To answer my own question, Cincinnati, and this may be actually a combination. You may have actually, I'm answering the question. Was there a game plan change? Yes, there probably was, and it was to address this. Cincinnati right now ranked the 27th defense against the rush.
Well,
so,
there you go.
was New England aware of that? Heavily aware of it. Heavily aware of it. You and I were talking a bit last week here on this program. We talked about it again on our Thursday night program with the whole gang on the Frat House Sports Show about Tom Brady. Well, you know, you and I both, and Sidekick jumped in as well and said, hey, don't count out Tom Brady. You know, these guys don't lose 2 in a row. And while Mark actually picked, Uncle Mark picked Cincinnati, he said, hey, Tom Brady is not, I don't think that's what New England's problems are. They're not Tom Brady. Well, again, let's get real quick. We're going to give a listen here for a minute to Adam Schefter yesterday on ESPN with Keith Olbermann.
The reports of Tom Brady's demise were clearly exaggerated.
Well, listen, you knew that New England was going to storm out of the gate on Sunday night. I think it was very obvious that they felt that they had to get up on the Bengals early. They went back to what's made them successful in the past. They used a lot of 2 tight ends. They ran the football. They attacked the middle of the football field. And any time Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots are questioned about that, the way they were last week, you know they're going to come out. I had a big debate with Merrill Hodge yesterday before the game. He said, this is a different New England team. He said, they're not going to come out. They're not going to be able to bounce back. They're incapable against the Bengals. I said, Merrill, I beg to differ. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens tonight. Merrill Hodge was kind enough today to come over and shake my hand and say, you were right. And New England, of course, is still alive and well and ready to play the Buffalo Bills in a big AFC East game on Sunday.
So what happens to all these Jimmy Garoppolo sooner rather than later stories? Were they just nonsense, or was somebody putting out a trial balloon just in case Merrill was right and you were wrong?
Well, Keith, think about it like this. Anytime you use a second-round draft pick on a quarterback, that tells you that at some point you'd like to get him in the lineup. And quarterbacks or second-round draft picks are on four-year contracts, so clearly there was a time frame here that New England felt like we're going to get to Jimmy Garoppolo here at some point in the near future, whenever that may be, whether that's this year, next year, or the year after. They know Tom Brady is on the clock. Everybody knows he's on the clock. But last night he turned back the clock, mm-hmm. and he looked like Tom Brady of old instead of an old Tom Brady, played very well. And, again, as long as he's playing like that.
As a Patriots fan, Brandon, real quick, what do you make of Schefter's comments with regard to Garoppolo?
Well, he may be right. I mean, Belichick has been known to, you know, draft a quarterback and that has played well. I mean, they didn't seem to get the value out of
Mallett.
The guy they just traded. Yeah,
Ryan Mallett.
That you would have liked to seen, but you know Tom Brady was a you know they took at a time when nobody thought they really needed a quarterback. Now, granted, they took him in the sixth round, but you know Drew Bledsoe was still in the prime of his career when he was drafted. If not for an injury, you know things may have played out differently for both of them. But you know they may be you know Brady's a little getting older. He's 37. It may be time to develop the replacement. And, you know, Garoppolo may be that guy, may not be, but he'll spend some time, you know, on the bench, you know, developing. You know, maybe he'll see some action. I don't know. Not every quarterback can make it through the year. Brady's been pretty good. He doesn't get injured very often. I mean, he had that one season where he tore an ACL in the first game. But short of that, he doesn't miss games. So he shows up on the injury report a lot. A lot of people think that's games Belichick plays, but.
Yeah, probably.
He doesn't miss games and. He doesn't, you know, doesn't ever really show any effects of injuries on the field. So, you know, I think he answered a lot of questions. I think he was off a little bit. I still think they have some work to do. Like I said, their receiving core ain't the greatest. They need to figure something out, get somebody on the same page, something. But they'll work on it. They're getting there. You know, they clearly have the rushing game going right now, and the tight ends are looking pretty good. So, you know, they'll keep working on it. They don't quit.
We got a couple of minutes here, so let me throw the number out, 347-826-9964. Jump in, get in with us, give us a last-minute holler here. And I got quite a few friends of mine who are New York Jets fans. And, well, they might want to give us a holler here real quick. As we're going to wind it up here, Brandon, just give it a few minutes chat, not love, because I know you've got none, for the New York Jets. This team right now is 1-4, and we have talked about the dysfunctionality of this team, it seems like, well, probably ever since Rex Ryan got there. But I don't know if they've ever looked quite as bad as they do right now. Rex Ryan comes out after the game last week, takes full responsibility, takes all of the blame for everything, and... I don't know what's going on. You've got stories about Geno Smith. Geno Smith doesn't show up for pregame meetings on Saturday.
He's at the movies
eating popcorn.
He wasn't alone, apparently, either. He was with some of his buddies,
exactly. Oh. And, the team is covering up for him, saying, don't worry about it. Rex does that all the time. When the guys are out here on the West Coast, they're told don't change from the East Coast time, so he got the time all mixed up. But how did two, three, four guys that are all together all get the wrong time? They had to know what time it was to get to the movie.
Yeah, I I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I'm not either.
It's just more dysfunction. Rex Ryan, he's clearly struggling, grasping to save his job. You know. And he's doing it all wrong. I mean, he comes out, like you said, takes all the responsibility, then immediately turns around and names Geno Smith the starter for the next week. Didn't look at 1 minute of tape. Didn't look at anything about the game that led him to bench Geno Smith at halftime and come out with Michael Vick, and then he just clearly goes and names him the starter without even looking at any of the film. It's not the way coaches are supposed to work. Period.
Would this team be better off moving to Mike Vick, you think, for you know, at least a full game, maybe two? Give it a
Who
shot.
Knows?
Who knows?
They signed Vick. They signed Chris Johnson at running back, who has been a ghost the last few games, and Eric Decker, who's been hurt. They sign all these names on offense, and it still doesn't matter. They still can't score. They don't even get a field goal in this game. You know, it's almost laughable when you think about it. You know, they have the distinction of being the first shutout in the entire league this year. This was the first game that anybody was shut out in this entire season. You know, that's
looks worse than I have ever seen them.
Well, here's the thing. They played San Diego in San Diego, and I know you're not the biggest Phillip Rivers fan, but San Diego is turning some heads. You know, I think they're actually going to give the Broncos a run for their money going down to the end here. You know, they're playing good mistake-free football. They're putting up lots of points. They're not giving up lots of points. You know, it's an equation that, you know, when you look at their line, they have 133 points for and 63 against. That's the kind of spread you want to see. You know, that's the sign of a team that's you know, playing good football. And, you know, Phillip Rivers, you may not like him, but he's putting up numbers. And, you know, the biggest numbers, the four in the win column right now, being 4-1, they're technically half a game ahead of the Broncos. And, you know, I'm sure that's going to change at some point. They're going to, you know, meet each other being division rivals. But, you know, right now they certainly look like they're at least capable of giving the Broncos a run for that division.
Phillip Rivers, for me, suffers from the same thing that I think Donovan McNabb suffered from with a lot of Philadelphia fans. The guy might have the numbers, but he doesn't have anything else to show for it. And I frankly think the guy is a little bit overrated. Now, a lot of people are going to dispute me on that, because when you take a look at the numbers are certainly there to back it up. Right now, Rivers is the fourth-ranked quarterback in the entire league, and my goodness, I think he may just have the best QB ranking of any of them at 116.3. I think that leads the league. So, you know, I can't talk too much.
Well, here's the easiest way to look at this. Okay, the San Diego Chargers have had issues, you know, with coaching and a lot of coaching changes, et cetera, et cetera. And they've not had the most consistent running game the last few years. Ryan Matthews right now is out hurt. They had a relatively unknown Brendan Oliver come up and just put up monster numbers, you know, this past season. And as you just pointed out, Phillip Rivers is getting it done from the quarterback position. You know, fantasy, people love him. He's the second-ranked fantasy quarterback in the league this year. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, he can clearly put the numbers up, but the most impressive number right now to me is the 4-1 record, you know, and they're winning the games by big margins. So, you know, I mean, yes, they have to face the Broncos twice this year. That's, you know, part of being division rivals. You know, they kind of get a cakewalk this week. They get the Raiders in their own division. So, you know, they should come away with another win, but I'm sure their schedule's going to get tough down the road. But right now, you can't argue with the Chargers. I'm sorry.
All right, folks, there you go. That is our wrap for Week 5 of the NFL and our fourth program right here of the Red Zone Blitz here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Hard to believe. They go faster and faster, it seems, Brandon, every single week. Make sure that you, the next time we are here with you and that we are on the air with you, make sure you're here for us and listening to us and calling into us. And that'll be Thursday night with our Frat House Sports Show at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we'll be on for, it'll be scheduled for 2 hours, so we'll see how that goes. But sometime between 7 and 9, you can catch us right here with the Frat House Sports Show number 161. I'll be back with you on Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern time with Frat House Saturday. And then Uncle Mark will come back in on Sunday to clean up the week and bring you the Racetrim Motorsports Hour as we get ready for Chase Race number 5 in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. for all of us here at Frat House Sports. Thanks very much for listening. Make sure you're tuning in to all of our programs. Catch you the next time.
Have a good one. We'll be right back.